Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 353 of Longbox Heroes. Joe and Todd joining you here on this post 4th of July extravaganza.
Mm-hmm. I have all my digits.
I told you at the shop, and I think I mentioned in the show here as well, that I grew a few extra digits just in case I decided to blow a couple off for the 4th. I'd still end the holiday with 10. And we're up, so I gotta cut one off, so.
There you go.
And again, peeling the curtain back, I don't know if the microphones are picking up the bombing of Normandy that's happening behind me, so.
Dunkirk.
Right, exactly. Not a preview for the upcoming Christopher Nolan film, but.
Which I can't wait to see, though.
I don't know what my feelings are on it, only because I don't make the decisions in the house of what movies we get to go see.
What?
I didn't want to see. Oh, and now we'd start the show off this way. Here's my review of Despicable Me 3.
Right.
I got to go to our local movie theater that has the fancy reserved seatings now.
Yes!
And if it's a movie that I have little to no interest in, I fall asleep immediately.
In those big reclining poofy chairs? They're the best.
I drank a milkshake during the previews, and I don't think I made it 5 minutes into the movie.
So that's your review, is the dream you had during it, where you and Carl Malden fought off aliens from like a faraway planet?
Yes.
That's the movie I'd watch.
And I'll say this here, having seen the previews before Despicable Me 3. I know that it's a thing. I did not know there's been two of them that would necessitate a third one coming out this year. But based on the trailer I saw, Pitch Perfect might be the worst thing ever.
I don't know. I like baseball movies.
No, I think you're thinking of Basketball.
Don't make fun of Basketball. That movie's amazing.
Let's not go crazy.
And the Bears away jerseys? I want one. That's all I'm saying.
I'm sure you could find one real cheap. I can imagine they're not in high demand.
I bet you they are out of China.
Ugh. But yeah, so I'm aware that Pitch Perfect is a thing, but the trailer for this third movie, like, it looked like a joke trailer.
Like, this isn't a real movie?
Right. Like, if you were to make fun of a movie and bad movie tropes and doing it in a way that was so obvious and so on the nose that people would be like, all right, I get the jokes you're trying to tell here. I'm with you. But no, this is a real movie that's going to be released in theaters, Todd. And there had been two before it.
Well, we should, now that three's out, we should go see one and two to get caught up.
Nope.
Okay.
Unless Ace is somehow, I don't want to say that I talked him out of it, but he seemingly has forgotten that the Transformers movies are a thing. Because I've been hearing lots of good things.
Oh.
I don't know if you can see me winking into the microphone about the latest movie.
Mm-hmm.
Where even the people who like those movies are like, yeah, this is the worst one.
Those people.
It's the one that's made the least amount of money, but they're already filming the Bumblebee prequel, so at least we'll get a sixth movie.
You know what? When Shia comes back, you can have my money.
To the films, or from whatever madness has enveloped his life?
Little from column A, little from column B.
All right. So there is no madness on this week's show, segue.
Yes.
As we're going to discuss some of the things that came out in the news, it's a heavy news cycle regarding Marvel and the upcoming Legacy project. Not Rebirth or New 52 or nothing like that. Some convention news that'll lead us into convention talk. And the announcement of a third fast food tie-in that, like my friend Robert would say, we knew about weeks ago.
is that Siskel's partner?
No, yeah, Siskel and Robert.
Yeah.
A.K.A. Trevor the Irish wrestling fan.
Okay.
But nobody calls him that anymore. You could ask about that later if you care.
I'll write it down.
All right. New comics, freebies, sales, a bunch of good sales, what we've read this past week, and it's going to be a full DC Warner Brothers Looney Tunes sweep there, as we're going to be discussing both the Jonah Hex Yosemite Sam book, as well as the Batman Elmer Fudd book. What we're looking forward to coming out this week, Todd and Joe have issues as we discuss Jonah Hex number 26, as well as our discussion of the first two episodes of AMC's Preacher series.
Yes.
So let's begin here, Todd, with the Marvel Legacy stuff. So we talked about last week that there was 52 books, but apparently there's 53 books. There's one that hasn't been officially announced yet, and there's a lot of speculation as to what it is. Now, they did also announce what all the books are going back to their original numbering, and I haven't found the person online or on Red Edit or whatever it is who's actually done the math to see if these numbers are correct. As I can almost guarantee, just looking at the list, the Spirits of Vengeance book is not correct.
You don't know.
Because they're claiming that Spirits of Vengeance is number one, and I know there's been at least a Spirits of Vet, a book called Ghost Rider Spirits of Vengeance before, and another book just called Spirits of Vengeance as well, and another book called Midnight Sun Spirits of Vengeance. None of those are being included in this. And then, strangely, Jessica Jones isn't being lumped in with previous iterations of, like, Alias or The Pulse, which, you know, you could kind of split one way or the other. Defenders is only this existing iteration of it, not all the previous ones. Whereas Doctor Strange is counting all the previous ones when it was called, like, Doctor Strange Sorcerer Supreme and every other iteration there. Even the ones that were just called Strange. But anyway.
Well, I know for a fact there was a Spirits of Vengeance book because I remember when someone was trying to shoplift one from our comic shop and got caught. So,
hoping that it would go up in value or something?
Oh, no, no. This was a guy who was a little on the sauce, maybe. And I was walking around the comic shop. Matt was working. And I walk around, and this was when it was on Linden Street. And I see the guy pull, like for like comic effect, but he's drunk and it's not for comic effect, pulls out his the front of his sweatpants really far and starts putting the comic down his pants.
My goodness.
And he looks at me, sees that I'm looking right at him, and he goes, shh.
Oh my goodness.
Right? So I go to Matt. I'm like, Matt, that guy just stole something. And he's like, actually he goes, shh, I want to get more. That's what he said. I want to get more, right? So I tell Matt, and Matt's like, as he's like grabbing stuff, he's like, excuse me, can I help you? And the guy's like, whoa, no, I'm just looking. And he's like, do you have a comic in your pants? And he's like, oh, yeah. Well, and he kind of pulls it out and he gives it to him. He's like, well, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I just didn't have the money, and I'm looking for a story, the one where, you know, Spider-Man's on the moon with the three-speed Venom. Swear to God, he said the three-speed Venom. And I was like, I don't even know what that means. Matt's like, well, I'm going to have to ask you to put the comic back. He put it back, and I'm going to have to ask you to leave. And the guy goes outside, and there's just, like, imagine a shot of looking outside the shop. And the guy just looks to the left, goes to the right to run, and just goes head over heels into a bush. And that's the last we ever saw of him.
Oh, my goodness. So there was 23 issues of a book called Ghost Rider Blaze, Spirits of Vengeance, and then a one-shot of called Spirits of Vengeance, Rise of the Midnight Suns.
So that's the book, yes.
Right, so there was at least 24 issues previously, again, not being included in this.
Maybe they were all minus issues.
Maybe. So if I didn't have enough time taking care of other things that we're discussing on After Dark this week, maybe I would go through these books one by one and tell them how they're wrong.
Yes. I got no time.
Right, exactly. All I've got is time.
I ain't got time for that.
But that mystery 53rd book, right? Mm-hmm. So allegedly, that 53rd book is going to be a Captain America book, which is not on the lineup currently. As we discussed last week, Fantastic Four is missing and Captain America is missing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's speculation of who's going to be doing that Captain America book. And we've discussed in the show here, of course, prior to Secret Empire starting here, we kind of both got a little burned out on what was going on with the Captain America books, both on the Steve Rogers front and the Sam Wilson front.
Mm-hmm.
However, allegedly, the creative team for this book is going to be Mark Waid and Chris Samnee, who have done a good comic book or two in their day.
That's right, they created Daredevil.
Right, they created Daredevil.
As far as Todd's concerned.
So if they can create, quote-unquote, Captain America, I'm all for that.
You know what? Mark Waid has an amazing Captain America run, then a not-so-good Captain America run. But he's been firing on all cylinders lately, so I'm more... if he's going to do Captain America, I love it. But I'm really hoping that we get an FF book, too, because we need an FF book.
Now, I want to remark to something you said there about he had one really good, and that was obviously the pre-Heroes Reborn one, right?
Right.
And then the Heroes Return one, I guess you're not a fan of.
No, it wasn't that great.
Now, see, I disagree slightly in saying that I thought it was good, but definitely not great. And then obviously toward the end where he ends up taking his name off the one Red Skull issue,
mm-hmm.
I think that was obviously the downfall of the book. But, you know, it was a little too tied to what was going on with the heroes coming back and all that sort of jazz. But that first run is super strong.
Right. Now, the second run, I don't think is bad.
Right.
But I think it's, you know how we always said on this show where it's like, if you're like with movies or stuff like that, either be bad or be good, but never be nothing.
Right.
And to me, that Captain America, that second one was nothing. And didn't he have a run on Cap Falcon? Didn't he do a Cap Falcon book for a little bit?
Well, no, it was Captain America Sentinels of Liberty. They did. He was doing two books.
I don't know. I thought there was a Captain America Falcon book, too.
No, because I think what happened was the Captain America Sentinel of Liberty book, he only did the first year on, maybe. And then Dan Jurgens took it over, and then it became Cap Falcon.
Okay. I vaguely remember it starting from issue one, but I could be wrong. Okay.
I could look it up. I have the internet at my fingertips.
I was kind of looking it up, too, but I wasn't sure. I can't, blah, blah, blah.
If only you were an internet search wizard.
Yeah, well.
You're a wizard, Harry, is what you usually say.
Oh, no, there was a Captain America and Falcon book that started from issue one, and it was Christopher Priest and Bart Sears. That's the one I'm remembering.
Right. So, yeah, not Mark Waid.
Right, see? Sometimes I forget.
Mm-hmm. Right, again, he did Sentinel of Liberty and then the other ones, as mentioned. So. Alright, so talking about these Marvel books leads us into a DC book that's coming out. It is the third in a series of Kentucky Fried Chicken tie-in books. This one entitled DC KFC Across the Universe, and it comes out in 2 weeks, which I think is in conjunction with San Diego Comic-Con.
Yep.
Which is the way they've done this before. DC released a teaser trailer of this on their YouTube page last week. It was the team-up, then it was through the multiverse, and now it says we're going to take him where he's never gone before. And the cover is the redo of a famous Green Lantern, Green Arrow cover from the 70s. And, you know, we may have had the inside track on this book being a thing many, many weeks ago.
What, we did?
Yes.
yes, because this is the third issue, I think, with who's the writer? My brain is – he did Rebels.
Tony Bedard.
Tony Bedard and art by Tom Derenick, and I think the cover artist is Tom Grummet. I think that's the team that they're going to – and I hope they keep making these till the end of time.
Or until Kentucky Fried Chicken gets bought out by McDonald's or something.
Right, but I can't wait to get my grubby little hands on one of these and read it.
Mmm. I hope you don't have to wait too long for that, Todd.
Mmm. Me too. And you know what? I was looking at that. I was like, oh, this one's the third one's coming out. So I decided to look up, and do you know what the first one's going for on eBay?
Wait, before you tell me.
Yeah.
I do want to say that the one good thing that came out of this is at least, because there was a time that these were available digitally for free. Keep that in mind. And then they went away for a while, but I think it's just the way that DC's interface is with Comixology, that it wasn't so much that they went away for a while, it's just that they made them harder to find.
Right.
So I will include in the show notes the link so that you could check out the first and second ones. And I know you're going to laugh and say, hey, these are promotional tie-ins with a fast food restaurant. First of all, they're good comics. Mm-hmm. Second of all, they're free. Third of all, if for nothing else, you have to read the letters pages in both of them.
Oh, they're the best. Colonel Sanders himself answers them.
Right. So, being that this is a book that typically you can only get the physical copy of at San Diego Comic-Con, and we're talking about the first one, which is a book that's 2 years old, I'm going to guess that it goes for about $20.
That's what the second one goes for.
Okay.
The first one goes for a little higher.
Like 50?
Little higher.
Oh boy. 75?
A little higher maybe, because they're on best offers, but all day long, like, I'm seeing around $90 for the first one. Because I think the first one was like, wasn't a lot printed, because I don't think they showed up at New York. Do you know what I mean?
Like, right.
Because whenever they have them left over, whatever promo stuff DC or Marvel has, whatever, like, and other companies that they do there, like, oh, these are our San Diego exclusives. What we have left over, take them to New York. And you couldn't get them at New York. Now they print so many, like the second one you were able to get at New York. So I don't know, but that first one seems to be quite popular.
I am seeing sold listings just within the last month for about $80 to $100.
That's why I said 90. It was, yeah. You know what I mean? I split the middle.
There is someone who had it sold for $95.95. So
now, did you see the 9.8 CGC one? Someone's asking $10,000.
Yeah, I think that might be a little, or best offer.
Hey, as long as your best offer is $10,000, because that's the comic. Like I said, why would I want to buy a mid to low grade key Silver Age book when I can buy a 9.8 Kentucky Fried Chicken promo comic?
Right.
Oh, that's going to hold its value. $10,000.
Now, if anything, I'm going to spend my money on as I'm looking at things on eBay. I'm going to look at this Colonel Sanders signed, inscribed 8x10 photo of him in a parade in Washington, D.C.
That's legit. Certificate of authenticity.
Yes, yes. It's only $800.
Well, he's a popular man. I'll tell you, people want that artwork from KFC. There's like KFC collectors. Give me some of that Colonel Sanders artwork. And Tom Derenick is the definitive. This is his third stage of art. He has phases. The first phase was tubes up the nose. The second phase was big maces for hands. And the third one is his Colonel Sanders phase.
Now, you'll have to remind me, were we slipped into the KFC book?
I don't know. We were not slipped into the KFC book.
Why did I think that we were?
Were we? It's been a while. I don't know. Next one. If he gets the next one, we have to be slipped in there.
All right.
Definitely. Tom, if you're listening.
Listen, I owe my robust physique to their triple bleached goo.
Oh, my goodness. Biscuits for everybody.
Well, not the Hardee's in town. They've got biscuit competition.
Uh-oh.
So, yes, keep your eyes peeled in about 2 weeks or so. If you're heading out to San Diego, perhaps, or if there's some runoff in New York, definitely get your hands on one of those. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe if we get one, perhaps it'll be included in one of the bounties whenever we put on for someone getting those Mark photos at a comic book convention.
Possibility.
And who knows? There might be some... There's always freestanding Mark photo bounties, and there might be a new one or two coming up. Who knows? We'll get to that when we get to the convention talk. Which leads us to our last news story, which is Wizard World recently canceled two of their upcoming shows, sadly.
Which ones?
One in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and they canceled one in Orlando. Now, if I remember correctly, last year, there was a show in Albuquerque that had some concerns. And maybe Albuquerque is not as hot as a market as one would think, but people are also saying that is the same weekend as San Diego, so maybe they just don't want to compete. And then the Orlando one is the same weekend as two other big Florida conventions as well.
Gotcha. Now, I think Wizard...
Go ahead.
I just think Wizard took a wrong turn in Albuquerque.
There you go. So the rest of their year is still on the books, and Wizard has released a press release saying that all these other shows are going to happen according to plan. And they said that, you know, as their numbers are going up, or as these conventions are going on, a year ago they had 25 conventions, this year it's 20, and they said that next year they plan to double the number of conventions that they've had.
Oh boy.
So I don't know what's going on at Wizard World. I haven't been to a Wizard World convention in a very long time, and I know some people have, or some people like them, whatever they are. And any convention that you go to, of course, is great. I just kind of feel bad when a convention here less than 3 weeks before it happens, you know, gets canceled. You know, people might have been coming out of town for that, whatever it is. And, you know, your trip is ruined, of course.
I agree. That's sad. But my thing is, like, it's like, hey, we're cutting way back on shows this year, but don't worry. We're going to expand next. I'm like, I don't know. That, to me, that seems like a bill of goods. So I don't know. Because it seems like every time you hear something about Wizard, their cons and stuff, it's not really good lately. And they have a lot of competition. So I'm wondering if somebody's going to, like, an up-and-coming, you know, con is going to try and overtake them. But they're not even a Comic-Con anymore. They're like just a con for, like, TV shows now. I haven't been to one in 4 years or 5 years to a Wizard one. That was only because there was a Doctor Who there, Joe,
I
had to meet. But other than
there's like three of those. Could have been any of them.
You know there's more. You know there's at least six of them.
At least six.
But, yeah, so I don't know. I don't have a lot of faith in Wizard cons right now.
No?
No.
You know, I'll say this. If Wizard wants to get a little bit of a bump, our PayPal is.
Uh-oh.
You want us to endorse you, we'll help you out. We'll give you that rub. And, you know, we'll be the official podcast of the convention or whatever it is. Listen, I have no problem being paid off.
You know what? Me either. I would love a con cha-ching. That would be the best thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore, you lost your shot.
Right, Baltimore had their opportunity. I didn't email them. We just said it on this podcast, and nothing happened. And I'm going to do the same thing here with Wizard.
All right, so let's get on doing nothing with them.
Right, let's just hope for the best.
That's right. If anybody has an in at Wizard, if you could talk to them for us.
Right, call get Garib on the blower.
Get Garib.
G Dizzle, as I call him.
Yep. And bring back Toy Fair while you're at it.
Yeah, and bring back the one that had magic cards or whatever that one was.
Inquest?
Yeah, Inquest.
Oh, see, now we're getting deep.
I like that one.
Deep cut.
Mm-hmm. Did you know Magic the Gathering is still a thing?
Yes, I was looking at Magic the Gathering card, the bags, like comic bags for magic cards.
Yes.
And they even have them, like, on one side it's clear, and on the other side it has the back of a magic card, so it still looks like one. It's fantastic. Now I want to play Magic. It's been a while.
I hear there's a lot of rules and stuff now.
See, we just need to, like, Ice Age. That's the cutoff point.
I think I was one more set after Ice Age, but that was the end of it for me.
I stopped around Ice Age.
Yeah, that was. I think that was the breaking point for a lot of people.
I froze buying cards after Ice Age.
What? You still have all your Jester's caps?
I do have all my. I have my dual lands ready to go.
I actually have in my drawer. I sold, I would say, 95% of my Magic cards.
Mm-hmm.
The only things that I kept was the beta black bordered Hypnotic Spectres.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one black Hypnotic Spectre that was black bordered because it was like from a foreign language edition. It was a German language one.
Whoa.
And it was just so ominous that it was in German.
German makes everything more ominous.
Yes.
And you kept your 20 black lotuses, right?
No.
Okay.
I actually didn't get in until after those were a thing.
Right. I don't, yeah.
I think I sold, got in right when Antiquities came out.
I sold, yeah, because I got in maybe around at Antiquities or a little later.
Right.
And then I was just like, so the cards that I had, I ended up selling for a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I was like, are you keeping any? I'm like, nope.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm sure that you could play Magic at one of the conventions going on this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be the VA Comic-Con in Richmond, VA, that stands for Virginia, with mm-hmm. guests as varied as Larry Hama and Gwar.
Gwar is a comic coming out.
Yes, that's probably why they're there.
I would get Synergy.
The more comic-centric one would be the Garden State Comic Fest in Morristown, New Jersey, which has a few media guests, mostly just John Wesley Shipp. But you've got your Barry Kitsons, you got your David Finches, you got your Keith Giffens, people like that. Bounty out there, if you can get a picture with Keith Giffen and he's smiling.
We'll send you something.
I'll send you something. I'll send you a picture of me and Todd with Keith Giffen, and he's not smiling.
And we look great.
That's right. But the biggie of the weekend would be Montreal Comic Con. This one has all of your media guests, from John Cusack to Adrian Barbeau to Patrick Stewart, of all people, and they're sure to promote the Emojis movie.
Mm.
David Tennant is going to be there.
Yes, David Tennant.
I'm sure sweeping up after the festivities.
That's right.
Stephen Oog is going to be there, Todd.
Stephen who?
Stephen Oog, O-G-G.
Who's that? Is that Ogre?
No, that's not Ogre. That's Simon from The Walking Dead.
Oh, Trevor.
Yes.
From Grand Theft Auto. I would get my picture taken with him.
Now, of course, Todd, whenever it comes to these sort of things, I always like to lead with these sort of folks and save the big money people for last.
Right, of course.
The wrestling folk.
Ugh.
Well, see, you say ugh until I tell you who's going to be there.
Is it Scotty Flamingo?
No.
Okay.
Too Cold Scorpio is going to be there.
Too Cold Scorpio!
And if you can get a picture of something from Too Cold Scorpio, there's something in it for you.
That's right.
Mean Gene's gonna be there.
Oh, he's still alive?
Yes, he is.
And that's not even being facetious. That I did not know that.
Right, and Montreal's favorite son, no, I don't mean Kevin Owens, Pat Patterson is gonna be there as well.
Oh my god, didn't he do the stink face?
He had given someone the stink face once before, yes, in his tiny whiteies.
With a little bit of chocolate sauce.
Well, you say chocolate sauce, maybe it might not have been.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, listen, Pat Patterson's awesome, Mean Gene's awesome, but I would say Too Cold Scorpio's, something or other, or Stephen Oog, those are some good bounty pictures, and the smiling Keith Giffen picture, if you can get any of those.
And no Photoshopping Keith Giffen smiling.
Right, I can tell.
That's all I'll know. Those teeth haven't seen the light of day in years. Maybe when he takes them out, but that's about it.
Wow. Now, the links to all these conventions, of course, are going to be in the show notes, as well as links to the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, where you can find out and listen to all of the shows in the soon-to-be-named network, including Long Bucks Years After Dark, of course, this show as well, Fresher in Parlance, Profane Arguments, Puzzle Warriors 3, Podvocacy, Talkin' Gimmicks, which is having all sorts of technical issues.
Mm.
But it's not from a lack of trying, and AIM Downsights Podcast. Now, there are some shows that I didn't mention in this, but there is an unofficial meeting of members of those podcasts this weekend.
A cabal?
A cabal, if you will. So whether or not that shakes anything out, my money's on highly unlikely, but you never know.
You never know. The magic eight ball of the show.
I might have to go up there and ruffle some feathers, I'm just saying.
Uh-oh.
That's right.
You need some muscle?
Sure.
I'll go with you.
I'll bring Asa with me.
I'll bring some oysters. What's that? That's the muscle.
Jimmy the Muscle. So, of course, check out anytime any of those shows come out, and I've been being much more proactive about it because I don't sleep anymore. Or if any of the people on those shows show up on other shows, of course, we put it out on the website, soontobenamednetwork.com, soontobenamednetwork.tumblr.com. Also here over in the show notes is some of the digital sales and freebies going on. The Titan Doctor Who 12th Doctor sale is still ongoing. DC is having a sale on the Young Animal Past and Present books, which is mostly like your Shade the Changing Man's, Doom Patrols, things of that nature. I would say, if you're looking for something interesting, I hear the new stuff is good. Haven't read any of it, but it's new DC stuff at a discounted rate,
mm-hmm.
which they don't typically do on their digital stuff. So obviously, if that's something that you're interested in and kind of have been a little leery of because of the price point, there's a perfect opportunity to check out at least the first three issues of a lot of those new books under the Young Animal imprint that DC has been putting out. Marvel has two sales going on right now. One is Captain America and U.S. Avengers stuff, probably because it is our nation's birthday. It's a lot of the newer Captain America stuff, so your mileage may vary on that. We talked about some of the Mark Waid stuff earlier, and unfortunately that is not included in the sale, alas. But there is some good Ed Brubaker stuff included in there. Also with the Marvel sales is Spider-Man stuff. This time around, it's Ultimate Spider-Man and reprints of the original from the 60s. So again, you may want to check some of that out if you would like. But also included in there is the more recent, I would say within the last two or three years, all-ages Spider-Man book just called Spidey. That was really good. Very underrated, very good-looking comic as well. So if you're interested in something along those lines, I think there was only like 12 issues of that. So I'm sure that's coming out because of the Spider-Man movie coming out this weekend.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they officially changed Marvel Puzzle Quest over Spider-Man Puzzle Quest after my months and months of begging them to do so. So that makes me very happy. And I am very excited to go see the Spider-Man movie this weekend. And we'll be discussing that, I'm sure, right here next week.
Right.
So, also the freebie stuff over at Comixology from DC, all of it will be included in the show notes, but it's free Comic Book Day stuff is included in there from both Marvel and DC. We'll have the links to the two KFC books as well. But the freebies are still the first issue of the Mark Waid Daredevil, the first issue of Fear Itself, the first issue of Punisher War Journal, and the first issue of Dan Slott's She-Hulk. So, again, some good stuff up there for free, and I think that's been standing now for 3 weeks, which is almost unheard of these days.
I'll take your word for it.
So that's what we have there. Let's get into what we just read this past week. I'm a little confused here because of the day off, of course. So, Todd, I'm going to let you start talking about with what we read from this past week.
I'm going to start with Jonah Hex, Yosemite Sam, number one, by Jimmy Palmiotti and Mark Teixeira. Basically, the story is Yosemite Sam has struck it rich in the gold mine, and basically his thing is he knows that a bunch of people are going to be coming for his gold, so he decides to hire Jonah Hex to protect him, and along the way finds this freak show kind of a traveling circus thing and meets up with Foghorn Leghorn, who's a pugilist. He would definitely be a pugilist during this time and not a boxer. And he kind of gets some information along the way that, you know, maybe Yosemite Sam and Jonah are going to get jumped at the cabin. So he's going up to warn them. And then Yosemite Sam and Jonah Hex do bad, bad things to the people who are coming to get them. I actually really love this book. It felt a lot like a Jonah Hex book from Palmiotti from The Run. On top of that, you add, which is kind of weird, the Yosemite Sam in a more realistic drawn style, but very like old westerny fitting in this book, where at one point when one of the ladies at the saloon, let's put it, decides to, you know, tell everybody his secret that he has a lot of gold. I was actually shocked at how Yosemite Sam handled that problem. But overall, I really loved it. I thought Jonah was 100% the Jonah that I absolutely love and adore.
Right, and of course, we'll get into a little bit more Jonah discussion with Have Issues a little bit later on. But yeah, I agree. This was good, not great, not blow away. I was hoping for more Jonah, but obviously, you know, it's more so the focus of the Looney Tune characters than anything else. And it was interesting because a lot of these Looney Tune books, the covers, I don't want to say are going to lead you astray.
Right.
But the covers definitely make you think that the, even the non-straight up Looney Tune covers, kind of sort of make you feel as though it's going to be in the vein of the old cartoons, where it's essentially these characters made to as real life as the comics that they're being put into.
Right.
If that makes any sense. I did like the depiction of Yosemite Sam, of course. There was that one part that was surprised hasn't caused a little bit more of an uproar online just because of the way the internet works in 2017, but here we are, and there hasn't been.
Well, let's not push it then. No, I'm just kidding.
Let's not draw attention to it. But again, this issue was good. I got no complaints about it.
Right. It's not the greatest Jonah Hex story ever, but as a man who's been missing Jonah Hex, it scratched that itch.
And I have to ask, did I miss the Hexecution coverage of this?
You have not. I was waiting until we discussed the comic to put it out, so people were wondering, you know, what was going on. And I still have to ask you a couple of questions. So, and then I will probably tweet out the Hexecutions, you know, the day that this drops.
All right. So, the other book that we read was Batman Elmer Fudd, written by Tom King, who is the current writer of Batman, with art by Lee Weeks. So, looking at the cover of this book, would make you feel as though, like, oh, hey, that's Elmer Fudd from the cartoons, and that kind of sort of has the feel of the old Batman the Animated Series design of the way that things would work. That was a cartoon, right? Okay. So, all of the Looney Tune characters, well, not all of them, many of them, are 2 to 3 bit goons or thugs as actual people in this bar in Gotham City.
Mm-hmm.
From Bugs Bunny all the way down to Marvin the Martian.
Right.
And Elmer Fudd, of course, is hunting rabbit. And the rabbit might give him a little misinformation about his sweet silver. And I'm not going to try to do an Elmer Fudd put on with the voice. And of course, in tracking down his sweet silver, Silver St. Cloud, that is, it leads Elmer Fudd onto the path of Bruce Wayne, which of course now puts Batman on the trail of Elmer Fudd. And here we are.
Right.
Todd, what did you think of this issue?
And I'm not joking around. This is one of the best issues I've read all year.
Again, I saw Dave, our local retailer, tweet similar sentiments, and I would be hard-pressed to disagree with you.
Mm-hmm.
This story is maybe one of the best comics I have read in a long time.
I was blown away by how actually good the story is, even though it's absolutely ridiculous of Elmer Fudd being a hitman.
Not only is Elmer Fudd a hitman, he is more or less made an even Steven equal with Batman, and it's not unbelievable.
No, it's not. And if you're a Looney Tunes fan, the Easter eggs in this are absolutely fantastic. Just, there's so many. There was one in the Jonah Hex. There was a couple in the Jonah Hex one that I marked out for. But this one, like, even like, I'm not going to ruin things in the book, but just at Porky's Bar, the sign that is tonight at Porky's Bar is WC and the Roadrunners. The specials are Hoss and Pfeffer, Banana Cream Pie, and Thuffer and Thuckatash. Don't settle for roast duck. And I'm like, oh my God. And then all the jokes that are like under the radar. For a serious book, there's a lot of underlying gags that are absolutely hysterical. And it has a weird Watchmen feel to it. In, like, the rain coming down and Elmer Fudd's going to the bar and he's talking to himself and everything. And I don't know how to explain it. It's just absolutely amazing. And then the story, how it all goes and comes around, and you get little bits of Elmer's story. Like, this works on every possible level that Tom King was trying for on this book.
Right. As good as Tom King's Batman is, and it's good. As good as Tom King's Vision is, and it's good, and as good as I'm sure his Miracle Man's going to be, this could be the best work he's done.
You mean Mr. Miracle.
Mr. Miracle, what did I say?
Miracle Man, that he's not doing, just so we know.
Mr. Miracle, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, so this is an unbelievable comic book. And I think it kind of helps that he's currently writing Batman, so he's in the Batman headspace. And, you know, we read the Lobo Roadrunner one, I think. The Lobo Roadrunner one was good. A lot of it was just kind of aping a lot of the normal Roadrunner, Wile E. Coyote tropes, but putting Lobo in place of them, right? But then there was, like, the Wile E. Coyote story that was going on that had to deal with, like, alien abduction and all this other stuff. So, you know, a lot of these books do take liberties with these characters, but the liberties that they took with Elmer Fudd just worked somehow. I can't explain it. If your local shop has this still in stock, go get it. It's available digitally. I can't recommend this book highly enough.
Either can I. This is hands down leading right now for best book of the year. And then you have the short story in the back, which is just basically rabbit season, duck season, with Bugs Bunny, Elmer Fudd, and Batman. And it's just somebody at the shop, basically Dave says, just how many times can Elmer Fudd shoot Batman in the face? And then on top of that, one of the greatest Calendar Man gags I've ever seen. So, yes, even the backup is fun. So, and that was Tom King too. So, I don't know, that Tom King, I think he's going places.
Right, and I think, you know, our friend Dave Fuente, who listens to the show, when we were calling for bounties on all these other crazy people, he went to one of the Florida cons and he got his Mark photos with Tom King, which I've yet to see, so I don't believe that he actually did them.
I wouldn't know what Tom King looks like, so he could get a picture with Joe Blow from Idaho, and I wouldn't even know.
Right, maybe Tom King is Joe Blow from Idaho. We don't know.
Mm-hmm. Say it ain't so.
Oh, my goodness. So, that covers what we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com every Tuesday, usually around 5:30 Eastern time or so, sometimes earlier like today or yesterday or whenever, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them mailed to your home, whether you get them in trade, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed. Todd and I are doing two things with our books this year. One, we're attempting to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. Still at a dead heat at 13 correct guesses each. And we're also keeping a tally of how many books that we've purchased And again, I have a sound lead over Todd. Not that it was a competition. It was more of just a cataloging thing. Maybe next year we'll include the dollar amount.
That's right. So I can win.
So you could win. Anyway. So looking over your books, let me see what's coming out. Let me see what you could most be looking forward to coming out this week. Knee-jerk reaction, I'm going to say you're most looking forward to coming out this week, Batman number 26.
It is not Batman.
Oh my goodness.
Which it's thrown you off. But you know what book I'm really starting to like, Joe, and I can't get enough of every month?
What would that be?
Rock Candy Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
I am starting to come around on the writing. Not that I'm coming around, just I love the goofiness of like the hobo gibberish and the fighting and just the dialogue and stuff like that. I'm actually really loving that book.
Again, so. Kyle Starks, friend of the show, a friend of mine, is actually doing a bang up job on that book, and I'm very happy for him. He's getting a lot of work based on that. I know he's doing the Rick and Morty book as well, which I'm sure is not too shabby of a paycheck.
Right. So, I look at yours now, and you have more books than I do this week. You're winning.
Of course, not a competition.
It's not a competition, but if it was, you won. Is the book you're looking forward to most Unholy Grail number one?
It is Unholy Grail number one. It is a new book from Aftershock Comics, written by Cullen Bunn, who I'm a big fan of. And this is one of those sort of things where I don't need to know much more about it, other than it takes place during Knights of the Round Table time, it has a horror slant to it, and it's written by Cullen Bunn, who I love his work.
There you go. You sold Joe.
Right. And I guess a lot of it is just kind of the brief overview of how Arthur is being tainted by the Grail.
Mm.
As I guess it's turning him evil. Evil!
Evil!
Right. So there you go. That's what we're looking forward to coming out this week. So if you head over to longboxheroes.com, not only can you see past editions of the Pull Post, you can also find past editions of this dumb show, the other dumb show that we do, which is called Longbox Heroes After Dark, past editions of Todd and Joe Have Issues, as well as everything that we've ever done on the internet. It is housed there, just like our little store that has our shirts and stickers, which you could purchase there at a very fair rate, and they are very fine shirts and very fine stickers. And also, if you don't want shirts and you don't want stickers, anything in the world is available through Amazon.com. And you can click on our little banner. We get a kickback, a few shekels on the back end, and it just makes us happy talking about some of the stuff that you purchase through our click-through. Such things as a Ross Mac self-cleaning slicker brush.
Ooh.
Valhalla Java coffee from Death Wish Coffee, not a sponsor.
Mmm, sounds tasty.
And for me, the winner of the week, a Pilot Trade Women's Professional Belly Dance Costume Angel Isis Wings with no stick.
Nice!
I was looking at them today. They are very nice. Mm. I think the person purchased gold, if I'm not mistaken.
That's a good color.
So if you purchase that specifically, let us know. Send us a picture of you in it. I guess. I don't know. So the one last bit of business, of course, before we get into the little bit of TV talk that we have, is, of course, Todd and Joe Have Issues. And the book that we're going to be discussing here is Jonah Hex number 26, written by Jimmy Pamiotti and Justin Gray, with art by Giuseppe Camincoli.
Mm-hmm.
Who I did not recognize the name at first, but as I'm reading the book and I see the art, I'm like, oh, he's the guy who's been doing Amazing Spider-Man the last year.
Yeah, he's been doing it a long time.
Certainly, yeah, well, at least the last year. Mm-hmm. So you're the Jonah Hex fella, so I'm going to let you take point on this.
Basically, the story is Jonah Hex is on a bounty, and he comes to this house in the woods. to ask them if seen the three men that he's looking for. He finds this woman who says, no, I haven't seen them, but invites them in through some clues. Joan is looking around. Something's not right, but he goes in, sits down, has a drink with her. She starts getting like weird about the way she is, talking to him and everything. And he ends up passing out because she drugged him. And we find out that the three people that he is looking for are at the farm, and she has done terrible things to them along the way with her sister, who we find out is there, because as Jonah starts to get away, he gets walloped by her. And overall, it's basically they've decided that they just hate men, and they've decided to amputate the legs and arms and take their tongues out and nail them to the wall and make them like little pigs and feed them until they end up killing them and throwing them, you know, wherever they're burying the people, because it's not the only people that they've done it to. And Jonah basically comes back after he gets a chance to escape and wreaks his revenge, which isn't so much his revenge, upon the two sisters. Is that a good synopsis?
Yes. I would say so. So it was around page 7 of this book, mm-hmm, when Jonah and the one sister are enjoying a beverage.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed the way that the sister was sitting, or at least the way that she was presented to be sitting.
Right.
That these two were up, that this girl was up to something.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not have the overure, the number of issues of Jonah Hex Tales under my belt.
Right.
Is Jonah this easy to be duped?
Kind of. He's been drugged before, knocked out, but I don't think he suspected that she was going to, I don't know, drug him or whatever. But because I don't know what she, because I thought she was drinking from the same thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't know how she got him exactly.
They didn't do the very obvious Ric Flair. She's pouring you and her a shot and then dumping her shot into the plant next to her.
Right.
Which I'm being told Ric Flair used to do. He doesn't do that anymore.
Okay.
But I really like this issue. Good one and done storyline. If you like Jonah Hex, this is a perfect Jonah Hex story. No different, no deviation from any Jonah Hex story that I'm sure that's been written in the better part of the last, what would you say, Todd? 7 to 10 years?
Probably.
Right.
Because I think Palmiotti and Gray together did over 100 issues of Jonah Hex, mm-hmm, so.
Which would put it right around 10 years or so.
Right.
So what this made me, the thing that upset me the most about this issue was, obviously I was late to the party with Jonah Hex. I didn't start reading it until the All-Star Western relaunch as part of the New 52. And then it was like, Jonah, I hardly knew ye. Now I want to read more. Reading this issue, and it felt just like any other issue of All-Star Western, which we talked about ad nauseum on the show when that book was being published. Now, mm-hmm, I want to read all these issues of Jonah Hex.
If you ever want to read them, let me know.
Oh, Todd, I'll take a picture of the books that I haven't read yet.
But this year, these are good, Joe.
I will say this, it was a good read, and it was a quick read as well.
That's one thing is quick. But the thing that it is, it just stands out for some reason, the horror of the book, because like there's a lot of Old West violence in this, but this one is almost like, you know, Palmiotti and Gray are like, I'm going to do a horror slant too on top of it. And like just the tongues nailed to the wall, and then Jonah going to the town with the bounties afterwards, like everything they've done, he's like, nope, the bounty says alive, so we're going in. And you're getting hung. I really don't care. I'm, you know, sorry. And just him knocking out the sheriff is fantastic. So, I love me some Jonah Hex.
Jonah Hex is really good. He's your character. And our book for next week is going to be a character that is one of my characters. As Todd, I don't want to say that. I was definitely a Johnny Come Lately when it comes to Jonah Hex. Todd is a Johnny comes around eventually, I guess, to this character.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be Daredevil. We're going to be talking about issue 7 of Mark Waid's run on Daredevil.
Nice.
A single issue storyline that takes place in a snowstorm. Specifically, if I remember correctly from the book itself, it takes place on what would be the winter solstice, which is the shortest day
mm-hmm.
of the year. And Matt Murdock is at a school for troubled kids. There's a bus crash. And, of course, Daredevil by himself has to do this using his no vision, relying on his enhanced senses, which are dampened by the snowstorm going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this is a more recent book. It's only about 5-6 years old, but it's a goodie.
That's right, because that's really only how long Daredevil's been around, right?
Right.
Not much longer than that. 6 issues before that he was around.
Quickest turnaround from being made a character to being made a TV show in the history of comic books, I would assume,
right?
That's
right. That's right. Mark Waid, they knew they made a movie before he even got the first comic out.
They traveled back in time.
Wibbly wobbly.
Oh, boy. All right. So, no new Todd's Art Attack this week?
Nope.
I don't know. Follow us on Twitter. Longbox Heroes. STBN Network for the network. I'm Joe Sposto on Twitter. Todd's Roker the Joker. Haven't done Twitter plugs in a while. And I don't know. I'll throw this out here. If you've never left us an iTunes review, go do it this week. Just to see if what other people are still believing is true.
What?
I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people that still believe that iTunes reviews make a difference.
I know of a local one that believes it too, so it's got to be true.
Well, you believe that, I'll tell you a story about fake hair, so.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, let's get into the last bit of business, I think, which is the 2 of the 3 latest episodes of AMC's Preacher TV show.
Right.
You want to start or you want me to start?
I want you to start.
All right.
Because then that'll let me know what I'm doing.
All right. So I want to say this as well. Because of the holiday and everything, I've not gotten a chance to listen to Podvocacy this week, where mm-hmm. they talked about the same two episodes of Preacher as well. And now Jason was the biggest trumpeter of how good this series was. And he's done a very good job of keeping it off social media, so I don't know what his feelings on this are. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched the 3rd episode yet, just because, of course, things and whatever. But, I will say this. Still don't love the show.
Mm-hmm.
These two episodes were better than the previous season. These are not my characters. These are different characters. And if this was the same characters that are presented in this show with different names and no association to Preacher, I probably would never even watch this show. Because the only thing that got me into watching the show that was supposed to be based on Preacher, at this point, it's like the loosest basis of Preacher, at least in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
There was one thing in the 2 episodes that I watched that I really, really did not like. And there was one thing that I really, really did like. And it's the strangest thing. And it's the one thing that's keeping me going at least to check out the 3rd episode before I completely write the show off as, again, not at this point terrible, but not at any point of like, this is must-see TV that I can't miss ever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so. In the first issue, I always say issue because they're comic books, but the first episode, Santa Killers is hot on the tail of Jesse Tulip and Cassidy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Jesse's using the word willy-nilly, and I'm not going to fight things on that. It is what it is. That cat is out of its bag, no matter how much they talk about, like, oh, we can't do it, we can't talk about the... You know, we can't use the word so much, and at least in the 2nd episode, they give a reason of how the Saint of Killers is finding him, which I don't think they did as overtly in the comic book, but I'm almost certain that that was the reason why.
Right.
Now I just remember there's two things in the first episode that I really did not like.
Okay.
So they go to Jesse's friend, who is also a man of the cloth. He's a family friend on his father's side, right?
Right.
And they ask him for assistance, and they're looking through some old photo albums, right? And they mm-hmm. have all these photos of Jesse's dad's side of the family. And they ask, where's all the pictures of mom's side of the family?
Right.
And it's at that point that we focus on a fish tank behind Jesse with a little, you know, treasure chest inside of it. And it's bubbling up for some reason. Now, if I've never watched or read a Preacher comic book, I have no idea why this is going on. And I'm hoping that these creators are going to pay this off.
Mm-hmm.
Based on what we've seen so far, I'm not 100% convinced that they're going to do that. That was a little bit too fan service-y for me.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I didn't like is the best part of the first season of the show was Saint of Killers. Absolutely best part was Saint of Killers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is just me. The scene where he rips the guy's tongue out
right.
felt a little too gratuitous for the Saint of Killers, who is essentially a man on a mission who takes no joy in the work that he's doing, who is here to do a job, and would not have done something as grisly other than his normal MO, which is just shooting you.
That's kind of the same thing that I thought there. I was like, there was no reason for that.
Right. To me, I'm like, you're going to take the one part of this show so far, and just so that we could have more gratuitous violence in it, do this. And I'm like, blah, yeah. All right, whatever. Now, the second episode, you have your whole little subplot, or your main plot with DeFore. He's the angel who's remaining. He's the one who promises, or like, Cassidy gets him doped up, goofballs everyone, high as a kite, to call off the thing with the Saint of Killers. He tells Cassidy he does, but he ends up not doing it, right? He ends mm-hmm. up essentially using, spoilers everyone, using the Saint of Killers to get him out of the lot in life that he's put himself in, where he's the Las Vegas magician who repeatedly dies on stage and then comes back like it's a magic trick, but it's just the way the angels work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the show still is just over-the-top gratuitous violence. The scene where Cassidy and DeFore are, like, tripping and, like, playing games and stuff in their hotel was just, like, a little bit too much for me. I'm like, all right, whatever. Let's kind of, like, move this along. Of course, Tulip's past coming back to haunt her. I also think God is the drummer at the strip club in the jazz band.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where God is, and they walked right by him. Because the way this show works is lingering shots on things and stuff that make no sense. And maybe it'll pay off eventually down the road. However, Todd, there's one thing that happened in episode 2 that is going to keep me around.
Hmm.
But I'll tell you about that after you talk about the show.
I really like this season over. I liked last season, but I really like this season. There's just what's going on. I'm having a blast in how they're saying it. I have officially separated the comic from the show. I've gone two different things. So none of that bothers me. The Saint of Killers tongue thing, ripping the tongue out, kind of bothers me. Everything else I kind of enjoy. I liked the priest, Jesse's friend, pulling the knife and taking care of himself.
Right.
Instead of, you know, I would, that kind of went different than I liked, than I thought. So it kind of shocked me. The whole angel thing being, you know, the magic thing. I like that he just wanted to go be with his friend in the end, wherever angels go when they die. And he's like, I can never have it. And he's just so depressed. But the scene where him and Cassidy get just ripped on drugs is one of my favorite scenes in TV in a long, long time. Just the way that shot, the way that's just music, vision, like it's speeding up, slowing down. I was like, this is a blast. And then it's a TV show that has a religious character on it that is promoting how fun drugs can be. And when he walks in and goes, he's like, oh, we're going to do some speedballs. And he's like, he hits him and he just, the lightning flashes. He's like, comes out of the bathroom and Cassidy's just like, less heroin. I cracked up so hard on something you shouldn't crack up about. And then you throw in the Come On Eileen scene, the grindhouse car chase.
Now, see, to me, as soon as that song came on, I'm like, oh, this is going to be like the scene out of Tommy Boy where they complain about the song, neither one wants to change the channel, and then something crazy is going to happen and they're all going to be singing it. It was a little too... I didn't like it.
Okay, that's, if that happened, that's
in, fantastic. If that scene happened in any show, I'd be like, nah, that was a little cheesy.
I loved it, so. Preacher's awesome.
Meh. So far, this season's better than the last season.
Right.
So have you figured out what my favorite scene of episode 2 was yet? The thing that's going to have me hanging on a little bit longer?
I don't know.
Okay. So the first episode ends with the cliffhanger of the Santa Kilda shooting the gun at Jesse. We know Jesse's not going to die. How is he going to survive? Episode 2 begins. Bullets coming, and a truck comes.
Oh, the old-timey axle grease?
No. Did you see the name of the company?
I did. I can't remember off the top of my head.
It was Alonzo's old-timey axle grease. A bit of a nod to old editor of the Preacher books, Axel Alonso.
Right.
So I'm like, that's ingenious, that's inspired, and that's the sort of fan service I, as a fan of this book, not TV show, but the book, can get behind. Kudos. You got me for at least one more episode.
And I'm wondering after that how you're going to do. Because they might do some different things and some same things, like the comic.
It's not so much as different and same things. I am at the point where this is not my Preacher either. But it's not as easily divorceable for me because I don't like it as much as you do.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say one thing, and then it's going to be the last commentary I have on you not liking the show.
Okay.
And then after that, the show rises or falls, whether next week you're out, then we're done, because I'm not talking about the show if you're not talking about
it. Absolutely.
But the thing that riles me up, and it's a Todd problem, not a Joe problem, and I don't even know if I'm right, but I have this weird feeling that even if this show was word for word, panel for panel, it would never live up to your expectations. I don't know why. That's a Todd thing. That's all I'm saying. Do you know what I'm like? And I get it, because I think if they ever do Sandman as a TV show or a movie, I might be the same way. I don't know, because I'll never experience it. I love Preacher, don't get me wrong. But Sandman to me is the one, like the greatest comic ever written. So I don't know, and I just feel that no matter what, expectations would always be further than, it'd be like, well, it's right, but it doesn't work, or I don't know, I just feel you would nitpick it to death just because you're that close to it.
I can't, argue a point on that, because obviously that's your opinion, and that's the way that you feel, and the way that I feel in regards to this. But I feel as though if it was, closer to the show, I would probably enjoy, or closer to the comic book, I would probably enjoy it more.
Okay.
Well, I'm not saying it's such a departure to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm in the minority. It's literally me and one other guy that I know that feel this way.
Right.
And it's not like I'm doing this to be contrarian. I went into this wanting to like this show. Believe me, I went into this wanting to like the show, but this is very much a Joe problem, not a rest of the world problem.
Right. And like we said, like when we were, we were bickering back and forth and you were like talking to me about Savitar. It's like, oh, well, you don't like Savitar. And I keep thinking to myself, I'm like, well, am I being the same way?
Yes.
Or is it just that they've changed the character, yes, but it's because they're telling the, they've changed the character and they're telling the same story as season one and season two. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Right.
It's like, now granted, if you had made Savitar completely different and didn't literally tell the same story you've told two seasons in a row, then maybe I wouldn't have had the problem that I had with it.
I'll give you that, but the argument can be made in regards to the Flash is there's literally thousands of Flash comic books and literally hundreds of Flash stories, and I'm sure you could draw parallels that at the very least two of them are the same,
mm-hmm.
or two of them are very similar.
Yes, but over the course of three, I've done it. I mean, the plot is the exact same for...
Right, and obviously you have a much stronger affinity toward the Flash than I do. And mm-hmm. a lot of it for me that I'm seeing past the Flash is, I think that the performances of the actors are very strong.
Which is the same... Oh, go ahead.
Wentworth Miller is great when he shows up, of course. I think Tom Cavanaugh is fantastic. And I think those, like, performances like those are what help drive the show, whereas I've yet to be wowed by any of the players on Preacher.
None.
Like, none of them are like, wow, that's an acting performance of a lifetime, bravo. Or that have made me smile with a line delivery, or it made me feel like, oh, that was the way things are supposed to be. Where, like, I would get that every time Wentworth Miller showed up as Captain Cold, and I'd get that 8 out of 10 times when Tom Cavanaugh would do anything.
Okay, I'll give you Cavanaugh.
Okay.
But Wentworth Miller, as much as I like Captain Cold, that's not acting. That's scene chewing. That's what that is.
Adam West says hello?
Right, but I know what you're saying. But, like, to me, like, there's no way that Wentworth Miller or anybody else, well, maybe Cavanaugh, is better than Cassidy on this show. Cassidy is Cassidy above and beyond. Like, I don't know how you could look at Cassidy and go, like, that's not Cassidy and not great.
Okay.
Like, everything else I can get behind, you know what I mean? Like, Joe doesn't like this, that's fine. But Cassidy's fantastic on this show.
He's the best part. Like, the best mm-hmm. actor outside of, like, and again, you know, Santa Killers as a character is great. The guy's not, like, doing a bang-up acting job or anything like that, but it's, you know, what it's supposed to be is fantastic.
And a man of few words, too, so he's not like he had a lot of dialogue in the comic, either.
Exactly. And, like I said, the guy who does Cassidy is the best of the bunch, but not like I'm like, oh, this is... You know, give this man an Emmy right now. It's just, you know, okay, he's doing the best jobby of anyone else in the show.
See, I would give Cassidy an Emmy before anybody on Flash. Even Cavanaugh.
Oh, now see, now you're talking crazy talk.
Cavanaugh's a good actor, but I don't know. Cassidy's the breakout to me. I don't know. I just, I don't understand, but that's fine.
Right.
I'm in for the long haul on Preacher. I was discussing it with somebody, the fancy gentleman the other day. I'm wondering how it's doing and how much we're actually going to get.
And again, not like I'm like actively looking, but I wasn't actively looking for any discussion about The Walking Dead, just as an example,
mm-hmm.
or Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul or any other AMC shows.
Right.
And it seems as though those three shows get talked about all the time, where Preacher does not.
Right.
Whereas, like I said, it's not like I'm like, well, let's see what they said about Breaking Bad today, or let's see what they said about Walking Dead today. It would just be like, I would go to any comic book site or any comic book Twitter, and they would be talking about one of those three shows. And Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul are not comic book shows, but people talk about them, and I don't see the same discussion surrounding Preacher. Maybe it's it's during the summer... You know, whatever the situation is.
I don't either. And granted, maybe now, because I've seen a few articles about the first two episodes and stuff like that. The first season, you know, not so much. I don't know. I'm hoping we'll get more, but I don't, as much as I like the show, I don't have high hopes for it. Just rating. I don't know what the ratings are, but I don't have high hopes for it.
Right.
But a lot of good stuff has been canceled and a lot of bad stuff has been on for a long time. So I never go by what ratings are, you know what I mean? On how good a show is.
Of course. So again, that went a little bit longer than I would have liked, but here we are.
I have a feeling we won't be talking about Preacher much longer on the show.
All
That's
right.
just my, if I was a betting man, and guess what, Joe? I am.
You are.
The farm might be put on that we're not going to be talking about Preacher much longer.
Fair enough. We'll see. All right, so that wraps up episode 353 of Long Box Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe, and we'll catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boo!